with Talk is Jericho. It's the pot of thunder and rock and roll and the home of the patented Duff McKagan joke of the week.
Jericho, Duff McKagan here. Hey, listen, a woman walked into her doctor's and said she's got a problem with her aviaries. And the doctor said, don't you mean your ovaries? And he goes, oh, never mind. Let's have a look. And he looks down there and he goes, oh, yeah, you're right. Looks like there's been a cockatoo up there. Thank you very much. Goodbye.
Oh, yeah. The cleanest dirty joke I've ever heard. Leave it to Duff to come up with that one. Or maybe it was Axel. You never know. One thing I know for sure, you won't leave disappointed if you go see Guns N' Roses live. I saw them in Vegas about a month ago. It was Unreal / Duff, Axel, all sounding and looking great. Go see him if you have a chance. And come see Fozzy as well. We are touring across the United States in our most successful U.S. headlining run ever. There are still tickets left to some shows. Some are sold out. But if you go to FozzyRock.com, you get all the info. And tonight, Friday, September 17th, we're hitting Grand Rapids, Michigan at Elevation in the Intersection. Still tickets available for that. But if you're looking for tickets in Flint at the Machine Shop on the 18th and Cleveland at the Winchester, those are both sold out. But then we return on September 26th in Louisville at Louder Than Life, sharing the stage with Metallica, which is always a bonus. Then we go to Harrison, Ohio at the Blue Note on the 28th. The 30th is Nashville at Basement East. Don't forget about the 27th as well, Indianapolis at Hi-Fi. And then we hit Canton, Georgia, Atlanta area at the Action Building on the 1st of October. The 3rd is Charlotte at the Underground. The 4th is Columbia, South Carolina. The 7th in Johnson City sold out. The 8th in Savannah, Victory North. We've got some festivals mixed in there. Go to FozzyRock.com and come check out us with Royal Bliss and Black Satellite. And then we're headed to Europe starting November 29th, the Cavern Club in Liverpool, the place that the Beatles made famous. Then we're hitting Manchester on the 30th, sold out. We got Newcastle, Glasgow, Dublin, Belfast, Birmingham, sold out in Wales and Swansea, sold out in Nottingham, still tickets in London. Go to FozzyRock.com for all ticket and VIP information. And also, after a couple of delays and reschedules, the Chris Jericho Rock and Wrestling Agency Triple Whammy is setting sail October 21st. We are back, baby. It's going to be a great time. We got Kurt Angle, Will Ospreay, Hacksaw Jim Duggan, The Rock and Roll Express, Dean Malenko, a who's who of AEW top talent, including Orange Cassidy, Dr. Britt Baker, DMD, Lance Archer, and Jake Roberts, The Gun Club, Colt Cabana, Will Hobbs, Ricky Starks, Chris Daniels, Frankie Kazarian, Jamie Hayter, Anna Jay, Chris Statlander, so many more. The lineup is stacked. Go to ChrisJerichoCruise.com for all cabin info. Brad Williams and Bully Ray are the hosts. Medusa's the guest cruise director. We got Ryan Niemiller and Kate Quigley doing humor, comedy. We also got Ryan Nemeth is going to do a comedy set. Marco Stunt is going to play some tunes. So much stuff going on. And speaking of tunes, Striper, Quarantine, Fozzy, Crobot, Rubik's Cube, Secret Saints, Nocturnal Affair, Paradise Kitty, Dave Spivak Project, Dave Schrader's Beyond the Darkness. So much going on. Go to ChrisJerichoCruise.com and get one of the few remaining cabins. All right, today on the show, she made her AEW debut to a full capacity Chicago crowd, chanting her name, talking about Ruby Soho right here in Talk is Jericho today. She's talking all about that night, how she landed in AEW, what Tony Khan said to her in go position before the show, and how her friendship with Rancid's Lars Fredriksson resulted in her new entrance music and gimmick. Ruby's also sharing the details of her shocking release from WWE. She didn't see it coming. Her time in the Riot Squad and her relationship with both Liv Morgan and Sarah Logan. So let's go. It's Ruby Soho right now on Talk is Jericho. So one of the biggest stars in AEW right now, and you're bashfully smiling as you say that, is Ruby Soho. And I love stories like this. And this happened quite a few times here in our company, in that somebody comes in and right out of the gate is bigger than they've ever been in the business just from appearing on our show. Now, you're obviously very humble, and I can tell that, but just out of the gate, how does it feel to be in AEW from, it's only been, what, 2 weeks, 10 days?
Yeah, yeah. It's like I was telling you, it's a dream, honestly. I don't even know if I have words to describe it. It feels like I'm living a completely different life. But you know, that's so untrue, because the lives that I've lived previously have just led me to this point. And I'm so unbelievably grateful. And this place is so special. Like, this place is so special. And I have wanted to see, like, this just seems too good to be true, honestly. Like, the people are super nice. Tony's amazing. Like, everybody's been super responsive, and the crowds are unbelievable, not just in Chicago, but, you know, when we were in Cincinnati, they were amazing. And so I know that it wasn't just a one-time thing, and I'm just so happy to be a part of it, and I'm so excited to fall back in love with wrestling again.
That's a great quote, to fall back in love with wrestling, because even for myself too, like, when I went to New Japan back in 2018, I started realizing, like, holy smokes, like, wrestling's actually really fun and creative, and there's a passion and kind of a whole world out there that you kind of didn't remember. And then, of course, that translated to AEW as well. So it's interesting, because when a bunch of people got released from WWE, I asked Tony, is there any that you're interested in? Your name was right at the top of the list. And that was it 3 months ago, 6 months ago? I can't remember exactly.
Was. A little over 3 months. Yeah.
So what kind of led you to coming here?
It wasn't a difficult decision by any means. It wasn't even necessarily like, will I decide to go to AEW? It was like, can I get into AEW? Like, I think that it is kind of silly for people to just be like, oh, well, I don't work at this one place anymore, I'll just go to, like, we're becoming like the place right now. And I love that I get to say we, because I love to be a part of the team. I didn't expect to just be here, because this place was so amazing, and I was just really hoping that I could get here. I really was really hoping I could be a part of the team and be able to help create these amazing things and tell these amazing stories. And I honestly, I've always said, like, I'm just in the right place at the right time. But I was just grateful that I was able to do that. And it wasn't a difficult decision. It wasn't even really it was when I was offered the opportunity, it was an immediate yes. It was.
It's interesting to me, though, because it's like, I think I asked this before, but we'll pretend that I didn't. Have we met before, you and I?
We've met briefly. I wasn't with WWE at the time when we met. I was an extra.
Gotcha. Okay.
I was doing the Rosebud thing.
That's what you're right.
I met. Yeah. When you and I met, I was doing the Rosebud thing, and we met in passing.
Right.
And there, somebody wants to be a part of the interview
people
too.
Coming in and running all over the place. And so I was like, hello.
It is a chaotic.
Oh, there's a dog at the door.
Oh, that's, you know what? That's the only time you can't get mad, is when there's a
that
dog
at the
door.
That was a very authoritative knock,
that
wasn't
it?
That
was an intense knock.
It sounds like a cop knock.
That dog meant business.
With the cop there, with the dog, so they're coming to sniff us out. Thankfully, neither one of us are packing.
Yeah.
But yeah, so we hadn't really met.
Mm-mm.
So you're one of the kind of, not the few people, but I know nothing about anything other than what I've seen on TV, et cetera, et cetera. But first of all, I want to know the name Ruby Soho, and obviously the song Ruby Soho, written by our good friend Lars Fredriksson, who is a huge wrestling fan, to the point where he actually gave me a collection of DVDs, pirated DVDs, Chris Jericho's career, that he had found matches
that
from Japan
incredible.
And Mexico and all that. And he gave them to me, like, I was like, who still has DVDs? He gave me 10 DVDs.
I love that.
So Lars is a huge fan, but were you friends with him before? Tell us about how Ruby Soho came to be.
So I have been a fan of Rancid for a long time. Mm-hmm. They were one of, like, the first punk bands I ever listened to.
Where are you from?
I am from, like, a really small town in northern Indiana, like, right, like, about an hour and a half outside of Chicago.
Okay.
And I always looked at Lars as somebody that I idolized, because, like, when you looked at him, like, the way he carried himself, like, that was a confident dude. Like, he was confident, and, like, he embodied to me what punk was. Like, just do what you want. Who cares what anybody thinks about you? Like, he just, like, he was somebody that I was like, God, he's just so cool. And so at one point in time, while I was in WWE, what I wanted to do, a lot of my coworkers were making their pay-per-view gears in inspiration from, like, comic book characters and stuff like that. And I wanted to do punk rockers that I idolized. And the first one I wanted to do was Lars. So for my Elimination Chamber match, I wanted to do, my gear was inspired by him. It was his Inked magazine photo shoot. And it was like he had like the sweater vest thing on with the plaid like t-shirt or polo top underneath. And I was like, okay, I don't know if this is weird, but I'm going to ask him like if it's cool if I do it. And so I direct messaged him and I was like, hey, I don't know if this is weird. I don't even know if you know who I am, but like, is it cool if I, he's like, I'd be honored. That's so cool. Let me know if you need absolutely anything, blah, 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 blah. And he was just so rad about it. Like, he was so nice. And I guess I didn't realize, like, I knew he was friends with Punk, but I didn't know, like, the level of pro wrestling fandom. And then at one point, he just decided to send me a bunch of rancid stuff. He sent it to my house, and then I sent him for like his kids and stuff. I sent him a bunch of like anything I could get my hands on, t-shirts, like stuff from like merch and stuff that I could get my hands on. Like, so we had kind of become friends at that point. And then when I got released, I wasn't really planning on doing a lot of interviews or podcasts or anything, because I felt like it was just time for me. Like, at that time, it was really hard when I was real sad about it. So I didn't know if it was necessarily the time for me to do a podcast, but he had asked me. I was like, well, Florence Fredrickson's asked me to do a podcast, I'm gonna do it. And during that time, I still wasn't sure what I was gonna be called. I didn't really like my indie wrestling name.
Which was
Heidi Loveless.
Oh
yeah, yeah, yeah. I didn't really like it because it was given to me, and
spelt
it Lovelace. Yeah, yes,
and that was so, you.
Yes, okay. that was me. And it never was pronounced correctly. It was given to me, and so I didn't really want to use it again. And so I had mentioned that to the guys in the podcast, and I was like, I think I want to keep Ruby because like it just feels a lot like me. And I was like, and I hold it near and dear to my heart because it was inspired by the song Ruby Soho. And he laughed and he goes, well, why don't you just use that? And I immediately just crumbled and melted into like 13-year-old me and was like, what? And he was like, yeah, I can get a couple guys on the phone. We can get you, you know, Ruby Soho. We can get you the song. Like, we can work this out. And I was like, I'm in front of a camera just trying to hide my face because I was like, this is not real. Like, this is not real life. He is offering to give me this name and this song. And everything just kind of fell into place just so perfectly. So I'm very grateful to them. I told him as soon as after the debut, I was like, I feel like I'm going to be liked because of the song. So like, ideally, hopefully they like me for me. But if they don't, they like me because of the song. So I was like, thank you for letting me ride your coattails of coolness. I appreciate it.
That's a start though. Yeah. Right? Yeah. If the song is what people kind of equate mm-hmm. to you, then automatically it's a good feeling,
yeah,
and a good vibe.
Yeah.
Because it is one of those songs, like I knew the song because mm-hmm. I have that album, but mm-hmm. you kind of forget, and there's a lot of people that had never heard the song. Yeah. That's like, Ruby Soho is stuck in my mind.
Yeah.
You become on the name, your name is on everybody's tip of everybody's tongue.
Yeah.
Because of that.
Yeah. I love it. And like, I know you can obviously relate with your amazing song that everybody's singing after the fact. Like, it's such a cool feeling to be like, wow. They're still singing, the music's
gone. That's one thing I love about AEW is we mm-hmm. encourage that. A mm-hmm. lot of people have songs like, you know, Wild Thing, mm-hmm. real quote-unquote yeah. songs that are just written for you.
Yeah.
And people, once again, like, it's something that used to happen all the time in older wrestling, mm-hmm. 80s and 90s. But now we have it back. It's such a great idea.
Yeah, because it just keeps them, it keeps that energy continuing from the point then the music stops.
Right.
It doesn't automatically die because that music, that energy is still going.
Yes.
And it's so amazing. It's so much easier, especially as an in-ring performer, to feed off mm-hmm. of and to be like, oh, mm-hmm. this is still going. I'm hyped. Let's go.
How was it for you that night in Chicago when you debuted?
Chris. I thought I knew what nerves was until that moment. I thought I knew what nerves was. When we started to dwindle down and the girls were going out, and like, I'm looking around, I'm like, oh, there's none of them left. So like, I'm going up soon. Like, I'm at the bottom of the stairs and my hands are shaking. My heart is beating into my throat. And I was like, I could barely breathe. And I've got like, you know, friends of mine that are around and everybody's like, oh, you're going to be great. You're going to be great. And I'm like, oh my God, I'm going to fall on my face. I'm going to fall on my face. Oh my gosh. And the countdown starts to happen and they started chanting my name before, you know, I came out. And in that moment, I almost started crying. I'm like, I'm not even gonna make it out there because I'm gonna bawl my eyes out. And probably one of my favorite moments, and it was one of the pinnacles of like, I know this place is different, is that happens and Tony from behind the screen pops up and goes, "Let's go!" He was so hyped because he heard them coming and he was just so excited, and that obviously like translated into my excitement. And then they told me to go, and then I got onto that stage and like that was the realest emotion. That was real emotion on my face because I never wanted to leave that moment. I never wanted to leave that moment because it just felt like everything I had done, every choice I had made had led me to this amazing pinnacle of my career, of this like this historical pay-per-view that I'm just grateful to be a part of. Like that pay-per-view top to bottom was perfect. Oh, yeah. It was just perfect.
A legendary show.
It really was. And the fact that I got to be a part of it, I got to be able to experience that crowd. Like I wanted so bad to just stay on that stage and just soak every ounce of it in. And I was like, okay, I gotta hit the ring and like, let's go. Let's hope we don't disappoint. So, but yeah, it was awesome.
It's one of those moments. Like I remember back when I debuted in Chicago, and this was almost pre-internet. People knew that it was me without really knowing, but somehow they knew. Mm-hmm. And it was like that for you. Like people were chanting Ruby Soho, and not Ruby Riot.
Yes.
Ruby Soho.
Yes.
Had that leaked out or something along those lines? Or had you already decided to be Ruby Soho from the vignettes that you had done?
Yeah, so the vignettes kind of alluded to it that like
right.
I had changed my my handle because I had to. But I didn't
like Twitter handle.
Yeah. My handle for my Instagram and stuff. I changed it to Real Ruby Soho, but that hadn't been definitive. I just wanted to use it so I could use the Destination Unknown. Like, because I didn't at that time, right as soon as I didn't know where I was going. Mm-hmm. And the destination was not only unknown to everybody else, but to me. So, I think that, I had used that for a little while, and then the vignettes as they started to come. And then when the name was approved and everything was, like each vignette, I wanted to kind of like pay homage to things that I had done in the past and really take the people onto like a journey of what happened after I got released. And then the last one was kind of like, okay, she's Ruby Soho. So I had done that, but I also didn't know how many people were going to see the vignettes. Like all I had them on was my Instagram, my Twitter. So like how big could they get? But like at least enough to get the buzz going like that, that was my name. And that was even better is that had they chanted Ruby Riot, I feel like I would appreciate it 100%, but I feel like I would still be kind of like, okay, there's still work to be done, like to get them to disassociate me from what I once was. But I was able to like kind of like come out as this new person and be accepted for this new person before I even came out. And that was really a beautiful thing.
And honestly, people, like I said, people knew.
Yeah.
Like they were chanting. And when you came out, it was just one of those moments. Like I said, that night was so great for, you know, there's Punk, there's Danielson's a surprise, and Adam's a surprise. But for you, it was really cool because, like I said, like a lot of people were talking when you did get released of like, okay, this person, I understand this, but why this person? Mm-hmm. Like when Miro got released, really? Like him?
Yeah.
And so to me, it was almost like a vindication for you that like, not only were people excited to see you, but they were like really hoping that you'd be there to the point, like you said, like it was set up with the Joker, number 21, who's going to be mystery opponent.
Yeah.
If that would have been anybody but you, I'd feel bad for them.
I would feel so bad.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, it was, like I said, everything from the moment that, you know, I had gotten released, and I really genuinely kind of felt like a sense of panic of like, what do I do now? Like, I don't know what to do. You know, I haven't been on the indies in 5 years, so I don't know if I'm going to be, you know, successful in that. And with the pandemic, there's not a lot of indies going on right now. And you know, can I get to AEW? What, like, I just had so many questions that went through my head. And I was like, I don't know. Because it came to as a shock. Like, I didn't know. I had no, like, feeling or anything like that. I was very sad. I loved the girls that I shared a locker room with. Like those women became like sisters to me. So it was just like, oh, I'm not going back to work this week.
Some of that. So there was no indication for you at all that you were going to get let go?
No, not really. They had done some releases prior to that, but there wasn't really any indication that, you know, I always kind of kept my head on a swivel. Like, you know, it's always one of those things like you are expendable, like you're replaceable, like you always know that. But like in that moment, I just bought a house and I was just like, everything's great. And then it happened and I was like, wow, this is intense, and I genuinely just didn't know what to do. I cried and I panicked and I ate a box of Oreos and and
original flavor.
Yes, yes. Okay, I can't do the double stuff. Right. It's too much stuff. Right. Not a good ratio. and I was like, okay, well, now it's time to, you know.
Did you ever find out like any reason given?
If
you say budget cuts, I'm gonna eat my hat. I'll eat your hat since I'm not wearing one.
That's honestly the only reason I've ever heard was budget cuts. But you know, I can't say bad things about like my experience there. There's a lot of stuff I learned. There's a lot of people I got to work with there. The riot squad, like the girls that I got to become lifelong friends with, people that like I'm, you know, Sarah Rose, like I'm the godmother to her son. Mm. And like, I still speak to Liv Morgan on a regular basis. Like,
and that was the riot squad.
Yes,
the three
of us. And like that, they were my sisters and they've stayed that way. So like, mm-hmm. I have that company to thank for that. And, you know, every decision that I made, you know, led me to this point. And I think the appreciation that I got, you know, was from the fact that maybe they hadn't seen everything from me in my previous job that maybe they wanted to, and maybe they wanted to see more from me. I like to think that's the reason I got the reception I got it all out, was because they were excited to see what else I had to offer. And I was excited to give it to them. So I'm excited to continue to give it to them. So
let's kind of go back into your past. You're talking about being Heather Loveless. We'll pronounce it properly. So you mentioned that you were in WWE for 5 years, and we'll talk about that. Mm-hmm. How long were you on the indies? Sorry, Heidi Loveless. I said
Heather. No, it's
sorry.
Okay.
How long were you on the indies before you got to WWE?
6 years.
Okay.
Yep. So before I got to WWE, I was on the indies for 6 years. Heidi Loveless was given to me. The name was given to me.
Like by your trainer or something?
I was trained at first in a backyard somewhere in the middle of in Nowheresville, Indiana. And I was just working at this one particular place in Indiana. And I didn't really know the world outside of this. Like, I knew of WWE, but I didn't know of like bigger indies or things like that. Like, what existed in the world of independent wrestling? Until I met, you know, my trainer. His name is Billy Rock. He trained me outside of Lafayette, Indiana, which is why I built myself from Lafayette, is because I want to pay homage to him. And he had like a 10-month long in the middle of Lafayette in a storage unit that barely fit the
right,
ring,
yeah.
with no heat or air conditioning. So in 10 months, we got all the snow and the rain and whatever. So, and he kind of like taught me the fundamentals. Like before, like my first day, I'd learned to tilt a whirl head scissors, you know, in the backyard. You'll just learn what
take
you
a bump
can do
through a table, but don't know how to do a hammer lock.
Exactly. Yeah. So he taught me the fundamentals that I needed. And then I expanded from there, and I was able to, you know, go to England and Japan. I spent, you know, 3 months in Japan with Stardom.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
How did you like that? So you have to live in the dorm for 3 months.
Yeah, right? it was intense. It was definitely a shock for me, but it was an amazing time. And to see the physical shape that these women are in and the training regimens and stuff like that, it was super intimidating, but I learned so much from there, and I loved the culture. I loved being in Japan. Traveling scared the ever living hell out of me, though. Like, just the trains.
Oh,
the trains. I never knew where I was going or like which train to get off at to get onto the other train. I probably ended up, I got lost in Tokyo probably 5 or 6 times while I was
over
there.
Easy to do, too, because those trains, yeah, if you get the wrong one, you'll end up on the other side of town.
Exactly. And it was, so that was the only thing that I was like, I don't know how to get.
The one thing that I learned when I first went there, like, it was way back in 1990, mm-hmm. once again, pre phones or whatever, was. Mm-hmm. Every time you leave your hotel, take a business card from the hotel.
Oh.
So you always have the address of where, no matter what
that
happens.
That would have been so smart.
Worst comes to worst, just give it to a taxi
driver.
Take
me here. Be like,
take
me here.
Yeah.
That's so smart.
Who else was with you while you were over there?
I had a girl from California. I don't know if she, I think she still wrestles.
What's her
I'm
name?
Not sure. Hudson Envy. Okay. And then one of our... She was living there at the time. I think she has since come to... I know she worked in the States a couple times, but she was helpful for our translator. Her name was Chris Wolf.
Oh, yeah, I've heard of her.
I love that girl so much.
Yeah,
she's just the most pure-hearted soul in the world, and she helped us quite a bit with translating and everything like that. That was the first time I met Kairi Sane before she had been.
Because she was working in Stardom. Yeah. Wasn't Io Shirai there, too?
Yep, Io was one of the head trainers there. Yeah. I have been a fan of her for such a long time, and she was the first time I saw her work, I was blown away. Mm. I was like, oh, my gosh, she's incredible.
Did you wrestle with them there?
I got to wrestle in, a couple multi-mans and stuff. But I never got a chance to really do a whole lot of single stuff there because I was still relatively I was still early on. I think I was probably 4 years in at the time. But yeah, it was an amazing experience. I was broke as all get out, though. I had every penny I had, I took there, and then I had ran out by the end. And then just to get on the trains cost money, and I was literally paying my bills, going to the post office, filling out a form to send money to my bank account from the post office to my bank account in America, which is also they take $20 out as a transaction fee, and I was like, I'm just trying to keep my apartment by the time I come back. So yeah, that was it was tough, but it was amazing. It was I would really love to go back to be able to properly enjoy everything. Mm-hmm.
Did you ever go back with WWE to Japan?
We went there, but we were only there for a day or two.
Right.
We never really got a chance.
You're talking about you want to go back and look around.
Yes, I want to go out there and stay for even if it's just a week, so mm-hmm. I could just really absorb everything around and be able to really appreciate everything.
How is it for girls? I know for guys, if you want to go to the gym, if you have tattoos, you have to wear a long sleeve shirt because of course they equate tattoos with Yakuza. Is that for girls too?
Oh yeah. I got a lot of real concerned looks walking up and down the street. So I tried to cover up as much as I could. Luckily at the time I didn't have my neck tattoos. So that was good. I could cover up a good amount, but if we weren't allowed into any of the gyms, we weren't allowed.
That's one thing they're still very, very squeamish about.
Yes. They don't
that never changes.
They're
yeah.
Oh, we should do a bathhouse. And we're sorry, you can't
swimming. Nope. Yep,
nope. Can't do that either. It's just not, it's not a thing. And then that's okay. I understand.
What finally brought you to WWE then?
Honestly, like I said, Chris, right place, right time. I believe that Jimmy Jacobs was the person that...
creator of the list.
Yeah, he was the one who actually got me looked at least. He told Sarah Amato about me, and I spoke with her briefly, and then a few weeks later, I had an email that said, hey, we'd like you to come down for a tryout, and I'm forever, grateful to him. Mm-hmm. And I came down and I did the tryout. And
is that one of those tryouts at the PC where you have to do 10,000 drills?
Oh my God. Yeah. The bag drill, dude, is the most.
The bag drill? Ugh. Which one is that?
So it's you have a boxing bag or and they put
punching
it,
bag.
Yeah, punching bag thing. And they put it in the middle of the ring. And then you have to do a drop down on one side, a drop down on the other side, hit the ropes, drop down on one side, drop down on the other side, hit the ropes. You have to do that I want to say 20 times.
Oh my gosh.
And you have to do that in three separate rings. Three rings.
So you do one, then get out and do the other one, get up to the other one?
Or 20 times, 20 times, 20 times. The only saving grace, honestly, only saving grace is that Robbie Brookside is at the end, and he is the most motivating dude on planet Earth. Go on then. Go on then, lad. Go on then.
Also a fellow punk rock aficionado.
Oh, God. He's my punk rock Yoda.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my gosh. I've never met a human being who knows more about punk than that man.
Yes.
You tell him a band, he knows where they're from, he knows their biggest hit, he knows how long that they've been around, what genre of punk that they play. It's amazing. I'm like, you're like an encyclopedia.
We were in Hamburg together in 93 for 6 weeks, and I'm that way for heavy metal, so mm-hmm. we were constantly quizzing each other
I
about punk rock
that.
And heavy metal.
Yeah.
And where we were staying, there was a concert hall called The Docks right across from us. So we went and saw, this week, I'm going to take you to the Mighty Mighty Boss Tones. All right, then I'm going to take you to Halloween.
I love
all right,
that.
Then I'm going to take you to see whoever, I can't remember, was it the DRI?
Yeah.
All right, well, then I'll take you to, Saxon. Or
yeah.
Else, so,
God,
so he'd be your motivator at the end of these shows?
Oh, yeah, 100%. He came up to me, and I was nervous as all hell. Pretty much everybody is, at those tryouts. They're just trying to change their lives and stuff. And he walks up to me, and I think he knows that I had a love for punk rock, probably based off of, some of the stuff I'd filled up. filled out in the questionnaires, and he goes, he looks at me, he goes, top five punk bands, go. And I was so nervous in that moment. I honestly don't even remember what I had said. I know that I had just like, for, first of all, in that moment, I forgot every punk band I'd ever listened to in my whole life. I was like, and then so I gave him a bunch of bands, but I don't remember all the other bands I said. I just remembered that I had listened to Alkaline Trio in the car before I got there because I needed something kind of a little calming, but a little like, okay.
Right.
And he was so mad that every time I'd get to his ring for that bag drill thing, he'd be like, Alkaline Trio, come on then. Because he's one of those punkers that like, the less you can understand in the lyrics, yeah, better.
That's not really.
And in his head, like anytime, like if it's like pop punk in general, he goes bubblegum pop. Yeah. And so we'd always go back and forth. There's some bands he likes that, you know, I'm like, you can understand this and you like it. And so like it was me trying to be like, this is another band I think you'll like. And so it was me trying to get him to listen to some new stuff. He always like, anytime I'm like stuck, I haven't listened to anything new in a while, I'm like, hey, give me a band to listen to.
Right.
And he always sends me something new. So he's just, honestly, he's the best. He was the best. It was so much fun to work with him.
So he helped you kind of get through this tryout, and then did they hire you right away? Or
my hiring story is always one of my favorites, because when you get hired or you get the phone call or the email, like you always think you're gonna be somewhere that like, where like confetti is gonna rain from the ceiling. It's gonna be this perfect moment. And I was working as a bartender at the time, and they were somewhere overseas, so they couldn't call me. So they sent me an email, and I got this email. And after I got the email, I'm eating like next door to this bar. I had this awesome hot dog place that had barbecue, like pulled pork on it and whatever. I was like, I'm just eating. I'm like, I didn't get hired. My phone goes off, and I see my email, and I immediately start running through the bar that I work with barbecue sauce all over my face, like, I got the job. And everybody's like, I thought you worked here. And I'm like,
you have a job.
So yeah, it was not the most glamorous moment, but yeah, I got the email and I started with them. They wanted me to start quick, so I didn't have a lot of money at the time, and I had like this tiny little blue Impala that the windows wouldn't roll up, and I just shoved everything I possibly could into this Impala and drove down to Florida. And
that was the beginning. Were you in NXT for a while?
I was only in NXT for 9 months, so I got hired in January,
which is short. Those people that go there for 5 years,
it was right place, right time.
Yeah, that's right.
I actually started on my birthday of January of 2017, and then I debuted. And again, right place, right time. They just needed somebody that looked as insane as Nikki Cross. And that's why I debuted on NXT. And then shortly after that, in November of 2017 of the same year, is when myself, Liv, and Sarah debuted. And from what I understand, I don't know how much truth there is to this, Vince watched The Suicide Squad and wanted a Joker, a Harley Quinn, and a Beast in a female faction, and that's why we just...
I'm going to throw a flag on the play there and say that Vince probably did not watch The Suicide Squad.
That's the only thing I've heard.
Although he did watch Spider-Man once. I know he watched Spider-Man, so maybe he is into the Marvel Universe. Who knows, right?
I'm not sure. Maybe it was just a trailer he watched. I just know.
Maybe somebody told him about it, maybe.
I've always wondered what made him put that group together. Like, the three of us couldn't...
So what did he want? He wanted a Joker?
Which was me.
Right.
A Harley Quinn, which was Liv Morgan.
Of course.
And a Beast, which was Sarah.
Well, that does make sense.
Exactly.
And the funny thing is, and being in the right place, right time, things always working together, you debuted in AEW as what?
The Joker. Wow, I didn't even put
See,
that
hey,
together.
We're learning things here on Talk is Jericho. Wow.
Wow, that's amazing.
Well, that makes sense then, because when I saw the Suicide Squad, the Riot Squad, mm-hmm. I thought, well, that's an interesting pairing.
Yeah.
Very random, but that would make sense if you saw that, because that's what you had.
Yeah.
Interesting.
And we, from what I was told, we weren't supposed to be together for very long. Like, we were supposed to debut together and then kind of split. But they liked us together, and we loved being together. And I think that was one of the things that, because we didn't think we were going to last very long, we didn't change our individual characters, and we just kind of like tried to get them to mesh together instead of like, oh, we're going to try to make each other a faction. We're like, okay, if we're going to get split up, we're going to stay who we are. And I think that's what helped us, is we had three individual characters that made sense somehow in a weird way that actually accented each other. So, yeah, it was, I love those girls. Like, and
but that's how it works. So, like, even when we started with the Inner Circle, none of us really looked the same. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I keep saying, it reminded me of like original Guns N' Roses. Mm-hmm. Like, when you see them in 1987, they don't really look like they're in the same band.
Yeah.
But that's the beauty of it. It's the genius. It just works. The chemistry is there, you know? And it seems like you guys had that with Riot
Squad. And that's the best part, is like, even just aesthetically or in-ring work. Because, like, in-ring work, our stuff was different too. But, like, one thing that I loved about it is, like, we had something that appealed kind of to everybody. Is, like, Sarah was more of a brawler, and Liv did a lot of the high-flying and stuff like that. And you know, I did a lot of the talking. Mm. But, like, I think it just, like, it just, there was something, and that's what I love about wrestling. And, like, that's one of the things I love about this locker room. And this, especially just this women's division, just taking a look at it, is, like, there's so many different women, different looking women, different women from different backgrounds that have different stories, and like just so many, like just such a complexity within this division that I absolutely love. And I think it's so awesome because there's something for everybody here. And I love that. I love that so much.
We really is like a wrestling buffet, we say.
It,
you know?
Really is.
Because also, too, like everybody comes from different places. There's real no cookie cutter. Mm-hmm. And once again, nothing against, well, I guess NXT now is completely different from what it was when you guys were there. But there's no real kind of, everyone learns in their areas where they learn. If you're coming from Lafayette, if you're coming from Japan, if you're coming from Canada. And that's kind of the style you bring to the show.
Yeah. And,
you know,
and that's, yeah, I just, this place is just so different. And like, that's the thing that I've been asked, and like, why AEW? It's just like, this is the thing that this place stands for. The thing that I love about wrestling is just complexity and diversity and being different than anything else or anyone else out there. And it's hard to do that in pro wrestling because everything's been done, but this place has managed to be different, to do different things, to push boundaries, and I love that about this place.
That's one thing I really loved, like I mentioned about New Japan, then coming to AEW was, and this is, once again, I worked for WWE for almost 20 years. I loved it, had a great time there, had a lot of great matches, etc., but there's a certain way that they do things, and that is the way they do it. It's very successful. Who are we to judge? But this is not getting pretentious, but I really stress this all the time. Wrestling is art. Anytime you create something out of nothing, you're creating art. We're putting it in our match or whatever it may be. You have to let the artists be artists. You know what I mean? You can tell me, okay, Chris, paint a picture of a cow. Okay, here's my cow, and maybe I'll put some wings on it, or maybe I'll make a space cow.
Yeah.
But if you tell me, paint a picture of what? Oh, we don't know.
Yeah.
We'll get to it. What? Or if I'm painting the cow and they say, okay, change it to an elephant. It's like, no, WWE does that. Here, we don't. We let you be an artist, and we say, we want you to paint this. And the creativity here just reinvigorated my love for the business, like you said, because I get to be an artist.
Yeah. And one of the things that I have stressed a bunch of times, and the thing that like kind of started my excitement for this place and to work with this place, was my first conversation with Tony. Was I was like, okay, tell me what you need, tell me what you want, like, just so you know, my hair is orange now, and also like, tell me what I can, how I can help you, like, tell me how, like, and it was very much like a trying to get like answers from him of like, and he's just like, basically just stopped me and was like, I just want you to be you and come work for me. And that was it. That was it. And I was like, it was the most simplistic, straight to the point answer that it like fried my brain, where I was like, it like malfunctioned. I was like, what? And like, that was such an amazing thing for me to be like, I could just be me. Like, I kind of can't do this wrong.
Yeah.
Because I,
there really is,
there's
no
wrong way to just be me.
There
and
really
like,
isn't.
That's such a freeing, beautiful feeling. And it's just, I keep waiting for like someone to wake me up or like
the
shoe
to drop
something, and it's just, it hasn't happened yet. And it's just, this place is just so, so, so special. And I'm I'm just like, I couldn't be more honored just to be here. I keep saying it. It sounds like corny. Like, I'm just happy to be here. But I really am.
But I think everybody that comes here really, even if at first they might be a little hesitant, like, really? Because you hear, oh, this is such a great place, or this is so much fun, or this is freedom. You don't really know for sure. Mm-hmm. And then you come here like, oh, my goodness. Yeah. It really is exactly what they told us it was going to be, you know? Let's talk a little bit more about WWE. How did you end up with the name of Ruby Riott?
So I am actually the one who pitched that. Ruby was originally from Ruby Soho.
From Ruby Soho.
At the time, I wasn't like pals with Lars, so that wasn't an option. So I
call him the other Lars, by the way. So there's only you can't be named Lars and be a rock star. Yeah. You're the other Lars. So you got Ruby from that.
So Ruby was from that, and then I just was trying to figure out a last name that I felt like was to the point, was kind of like that expressed my personality, and that like really felt like I could just like let loose a little bit, and that people could pronounce, because for some reason Loveless spelled it.
So that really bugs you, doesn't it?
Oh, it was just for so many years, Heidi Lovelace, and I was like, no.
Sounds like a porn star.
Yeah, I know. That's what I'm saying. Yeah, that's what I'm saying, and that's why you could tell a bunch of dudes gave me that name, but it just, and it was like one of the first ones, and it was super last minute. Like, I don't think my entry into when I debuted with NXT, I think it was a very last minute, like, okay, let's just give her this name, and like, this is what it was. And then when I got up to the main roster, we added a T because they wanted to do the Riott Squad, but that, I think, was already in
trademarked.
So.
Isn't it amazing how you can do that?
Yeah.
Like, Riott Squad is trademarked, but two T's is okay?
Two T's,
seems like kind of
it
like...
It sounds the exact same.
I know, it seems like a ripoff. Yeah. Like, really?
I didn't know it, though, until I started coming down. We were, like, looking at our Tron, and I saw it, and I was like, did they spell my name wrong? And they're like, oh, no, by the way, you got another T. And I was like, oh, okay, cool.
There you go.
Sounds the same to me.
Did you have any other, because a lot of times when they'll say, come up with some names, did you have any other alternatives, or was Riott the...
I think the only other one that I'd really like, that I can remember, because I had a list, but the only one I can remember was Ramona. That was the only other one that I had, was obviously from, you know, the Ramones.
Duh.
Also,
yeah.
Also, I did love
Ramona Riott or Ruby Ramona.
Yeah, both. I had all versions of it as because I didn't know what they would take, and I had a list, and I can't even remember some of the other ones, but Ramona was the other one. For that reason, and for Scott Pilgrim versus the World, Ramona Flowers. Was like, yeah.
That's a good call.
Yeah. So
it's a fun movie.
Yeah. Yeah. And my first entrance music was Black Sheep by Metric.
Really?
That song. That was my very first entrance music.
I think that movie went over a lot of people's heads. Yeah, people didn't get it. You know?
Yeah. But yeah, so those were the ones that, but like Ruby Riott was the first one that like stuck. And then after getting called it for so many years, like, it just fit me a lot better. When people would call me Heidi, it just always didn't connect, but like Ruby always did, so I definitely wanted to keep it. And then we got to here where I just get to call myself cool because, you know, Rancid associates themselves with me, so.
But now people don't know Rancid associated with you.
Yeah, which
that's
is great.
The best
like
part.
I get tweets a lot that are like, I didn't really I listened to Rancid a long time ago, but I found my love for him again. I've been listening to him all week, and all I just want to be like is, you're welcome. Like, because they're awesome.
Did you talk to Lars after your
debut? Oh yeah. He texted me immediately after, and he was so great. He's like, I was just, you know, thanks so much. I was honored to be able to, you know, be a part of that moment. I was like, man, like, you helped make that moment even more special than what it already was. Like, it was special from a wrestling perspective, but my love for punk rock and my love for pro wrestling, which were two things that I hold probably the closest to my heart and things that built me as a person, came together in that moment. And like, I think, you know, people were excited to see me, but they were also like wondering, is she gonna get the song? Like, I think we know that that's her name, but is she gonna get the song?
Right.
And then the song came on, and I think that excitement was also because that song is so rad that like it helped even amplify that moment for me. And like hearing that in the background, feeling that was just
amazing.
Well, another thing is too that a lot of people don't realize, like, you know, even with Fozzy Judas, like, just because, you know, I wave my magic wand or the band mm-hmm. does, doesn't mean you necessarily can use it. Mm-hmm. It's up to the record company, the publishing.
Oh, there's so much.
Maybe Lars owns that, but he, mm-hmm. but if he doesn't, then he would have to go through whatever record company owns the publishing yeah. to his music to get that.
Yeah.
You know, and yep. that's always a trick too. People, oh, you can't just use it. No,
there's so much,
there's so much behind it.
There's so many other things involved that need approval and stuff. And that's why, like, to both Rancid and, you know, to Tony with them to
yeah.
be able to come to an agreement to allow me to use it. I'm
we wanted to use Back in Black for when the Inner Circle returned after mm-hmm. we got beat up by the Pinnacle. AC/DC didn't even call us back. Mm-hmm. And then Max and I before that wanted to use Running with the Devil just once.
Oh,
and they came back and said, okay, one use, $500,000, which is basically a nice way of saying, you know, go f- but at least they came back. Yeah. AC/DC came back
we're not even gonna entertain this.
Exactly. We'll use it for Applebee's, but yeah. we're not even gonna entertain it. Yeah. So the fact that you got it, once again, for people listening, it's not as easy as yeah. Lars Fredriksson going, go ahead. You have to get all the bells and whistles to do it, but I'm glad that you did.
So how does it feel though too, like so I know just hearing a song that I love and that I hold near and dear to my heart from a band that I love, hearing the fans sing it. For you, your song, having yeah. them continuously sing it even after the music's done, how does that feel?
Well, the cool thing is the reason why I started using it in the first place is once again going back to Japan when mm-hmm. I worked the Tokyo Dome with Kenny, mm-hmm. I couldn't use Break the Walls Down, obviously. It's WWE's song, and plus I wouldn't want to do that anyway. Mm-hmm. So what can I use? We've been trying to get to Japan for years with Fozzy. I was like, well, maybe if I use Judas for the Tokyo Dome with 50,000 people hearing it, maybe somebody out there will go, hey, we should yeah. bring these guys to Japan. Hasn't worked yet, but it became a perfect song for groove, for yeah. attitude, for feeling.
Yeah.
And then when I had my cruise last year, we taped Dynamite on the cruise. And when I came to the ring, that's when everyone started singing it. It started on the cruise, which was really cool. But then we had the pandemic
yeah.
where we had no crowds for like 10 yeah. months. And it was like, I hope people remember when they come yeah. back. And they did. So that was cool because I was scared. Like, what if they just forget and they yeah. don't do it anymore? But, you know, you want people, and this is another thing with Ruby Soho, your song, you want people to organically get engaged. Mm-hmm. You know, it used to be a catchphrase or something like that. Mm-hmm. Now it's the music instantly.
Yeah.
It's like the modern version of Stone Cold's glass breaking. As yeah. soon as they hear it, they're mm-hmm. excited. Mm-hmm. They know it's coming.
Yeah.
It's very important.
Yeah, it's amazing. And I, again, like nothing against anybody at WWE, but I was not a huge fan of the song that I had before. It wasn't that it was a bad song. Like the Riot Squad song wasn't a bad song. But I just didn't feel like
it. You didn't feel it, right?
It didn't yeah. give me the feeling that I wanted coming out. Like, it just didn't, I didn't feel like it represented us as a group. I didn't feel like it didn't give me that feeling. And the moment it all out, I heard that, I was like, this is what
this
it's
is
supposed
the one.
To feel like.
Yeah.
This is what it's supposed to feel like.
Well, it's supposed to give you the
yeah,
vibe.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, like when you feel a great song mm-hmm. at a concert, like yeah. you feel like, you yeah. know, you want to jump up and down yeah. or you want to punch through a wall. I mean, yeah. that's what music can do.
And I think that's one of the best things about having that happen is it kind of ties, like, I know this is like this is a world that you live in all the time, is being in concerts. And like, I think one of the things that I love about concerts is for a split second, we're all family. Like, for a split
yes.
second,
oh, yes.
every single person
everyone's
that's
the same.
Listening, we are all like a family. We've all
yes.
known each other our entire lives, just for that time period. And that's one of the things I love about concerts. I love about punk rock concerts and any concerts in general. Like, I just love that, like, that love of that band, that song unifies these people. And I think that one of those things that ties in with wrestling, when you come out and, like, you're all, like, family at that moment. Like, we're all, like, we're sharing that love for that song because we love that song. And then you can hopefully, like, take them and continue to take them on that journey of, like, we're all in this together when I'm in the ring. Like,
that's right.
I love that. I love that combination of music and wrestling.
when you were talking about the Riot Squad, how they kind of put you all together, Joker, Beast, and was the other one? Oh, Harley Quinn. Mm-hmm. Did you know those girls from before?
I knew Sarah. I've known Sarah since I broke in. I wrestled her for the first time. She was 3 matches in. I was 3 months in. It was a real bad match. It was a rough match. But we'd known each other for a long time, and we were pretty much the only girls in our area. She's from, like, northern Kentucky, and I am from, you know, Indiana. and there wasn't a lot of girls in our like Midwestern area. So whenever, a lot of times on the indies at the time, because there weren't as many girls, when you would get booked somewhere, they'd be like, do you have another girl?
Right.
And you need an opponent. Oh, okay. Yeah, sure. And it was always each other for us. And so she got hired before I did. And so I knew her of her, but me and Liv didn't know each other very well. We didn't really even talk much. Like, we talked a little bit in NXT, but we were worried at first that, like, the three of us together, that, like, she would feel left out, because we had, me and Sarah did have so much history, but she just fit right in, and she's super lovable. That girl, she's so lovable, and she's so easy to, like, get along with, and so easy to just hang out. And, like, she just, everything that people saw on camera of, like, us accentuating each other because of how different we were, it was the same backstage. Like, we were all so different. Sarah was always on time to everything. I was occasionally late. Liv was always late. Like, and stuff like that, where, like, we evened each other out very, very well. And yeah, that's why.
Who did you feud with when you were the Riot Squad?
My first feud, singularly, was Charlotte. And then I also feuded with Natalia. And mainly it was just with the girls by my side. And then I also feuded with Rhonda and the Bellas at one point in time. Which was a lot of fun. And then those were my main...
How was it working with Rhonda? She kind of took to wrestling very quickly. She's
awesome. Like, she honestly gave me probably one of my favorite matches that I had while I was there, because it meant a lot to us. She's one of those people that's incredibly humble when she knows she does not know a lot about what she's in at the moment, but she's a sponge. That girl picks up super fast and legitimately has amazing instincts. Like, she's awesome. And we had a match at Elimination Chamber, and we were on the house shows prior to that. And she and I had this match that we were super proud of. We were really, really excited to do. We got to the show for Elimination Chamber. We had the time that we thought, and then a few minutes later, we were told it's going to be 2 minutes and tap her out. And it was just like that moment of like, okay. And like, I knew the story wasn't about me. It was leading into, you know, the first
WrestleMania,
the women's, you know, main event and stuff. Like, I knew that the story wasn't about me, but I was so excited about that match. And we were so proud of it because it was such a beautiful meld of our two styles. Like, I wanted to approach her from a way of like, I don't ever want you to put me in a hold, because if you do, I should tap.
Yeah.
Period. And I loved that challenge. I loved that challenge of looking at her and be like, okay. And I asked her, like, what are all the things that I can do to you that are not legal from where you come from in mixed martial arts? What are the things she's like, headbutts, use anything in the ring. I was like, okay, those are all the things I'm going to do, because anything that's illegal from where you come from, that's the only way I'm going to be able to catch
you off
guard.
That's smart, yeah.
And so like, I wanted to, but it was so much fun, because it was like this challenge of, and like, to get my brain to think about wrestling differently than I had, you know, previous years. And I was so bummed. I was like, oh man, like, we never get to like show that match off. And then next thing I know, Rhonda went in and rallied for that match to happen on Monday Night Raw the next night.
Oh, wow.
She went and she said, I always have a title match defense the night after a pay-per-view, and I want it to be Ruby. And she rallied for me. And that night, we were the main event on Monday Night Raw.
No kidding.
The one time I've ever been a main event. And it was, and the match went off, you know, fairly well, in my opinion. And it was one of my favorite matches, and I enjoyed it quite a bit. And yeah, she's wonderful. And she's just very, very smart and very, very driven, and just picks up so well. So yeah, I loved working with her.
Had the Riot Squad broke up when you got let go?
Yeah, so not technically. So we had broken up when I had double shoulder surgery. I had I was gone for 10 months and had
that's what it was.
Yeah, and had double shoulder surgery. That's when we were separated by the draft. Liv went to SmackDown. I think me and Sarah had stayed on Raw, but I was gone anyway. And then I came back from shoulder surgery, and they had me, and I jumped Liv when I came back. And I think we were going to go into some kind of story. And then shortly thereafter, Sarah got let go. And then it kind of turned into now Liv and I are now back together. It was like a kind of an abrupt end. And then Liv and I are now back together. And we are the Riot Squad once again. But just like a two version tag team. And then when I got released, we were still technically the Riot Squad when I got let go. But yeah, the Riot Squad had seen some like kind of ups and downs, and we were trying to, you know, stay above water, but it never really worked out for us. But
yeah.
But I it was that with them was some of the best times of my career, is working with them and getting to go on road trips and stuff with them is just an absolute blast.
Did you guys travel together?
All the time.
Yeah.
Yeah, we were always together. Always. We had like a very good system where we would get two hotel rooms, and then we would rotate whose turn was to have the single room, and then somebody would get the double, and then we would rotate it out. And then we would try to do the same thing with driving, but then we would avoid, you know, Liv driving at all, because she's from Jersey, and she didn't really get her license until like while she was in the WWE, so she didn't have a whole lot of driving experience, so we didn't really let her drive all that often.
Talking just as we start to wind down here, just you mentioned your tattoos in Japan and all that stuff. You have many, many tattoos. Yes. Tattoo culture, punk rock culture. Mm-hmm. What was kind of the impetus to get all these? Because they're everywhere.
Yes. There's been a lot of different influences and stuff like that I wanted. I think one of the things that I love about, I feel like I, that I love about my right sleeve, especially in comparison to what is not quite a sleeve yet, but is getting to my left, is like, it kind of embodies like who I was at one point.
Mm-hmm.
And I think my right one is a lot of like, I just kind of wanted tattoos and I didn't really know who I was. I knew I wanted them. I didn't really know why. I have a lot of flowers and stuff in here, and like a lot of stuff where I was just like, this has no meaning. Like, and not every tattoo has to have meaning behind it, but I just like, I was like, I just kind of wanted tattoos.
You just went in and said, you got something?
Yeah, exactly. And I think that kind of shows to like how insecure and unaware of my own self that I was, is like this side. They're like, oh, your tattoo. I'm like, these are so not thought out at all.
Right.
But, you know, I saw these at some point, probably in online somewhere. Like, but you know what I mean? And then like here, like there's a lot more.
Those ones have meaning.
To have stories behind it and to have like real like feeling behind any of them, or creativity, even if I did like just let my artist just kind of go, I knew what she was putting behind it. Mm. You know, and so I think like my neck and then my arm and stuff like that, like it really is like, okay, I'm more confident in who I am, I'm more confident in what I want to represent, what I feel is important to me now, as opposed to like, I found this somewhere, this looked cool, put it on my body.
It's so important to find the right artist, too.
Mm-hmm. Oh, 100%.
You know, because I was the same. Like, I always wanted to have a sleeve, but never really had any ideas. And then finally had an idea. I found the right guy. And then I could say, here's my idea. And my idea was like 1% of what he actually came up with to tie everything together. Mm-hmm. And that's so important, you know, that once you get that, then that really kind of helps you with your, you know, artistic journey.
Oh, too. 100%. And I think, too, that's the one thing that I feel like people, especially... Only if you find the right artist, because my artist that I have is actually a girl I went to high school with.
Oh, good.
She's the one who did my neck and my hand and my arm. Like, she is incredible, and she's so creative. She's so creative. And she is one of those people that I can be like, I'm going to give you a broad idea, but run with it.
Yeah.
I feel like that doesn't happen enough, because I've talked to her and I feel so bad for her when it comes to like, I want this in this specific way and this thing and this has to look like, these people are artists for a reason. Like, the good ones are an artist for a reason. Like, they're going to be able to take you way past where you ever thought you could go.
Right.
Trust them, you know? And so, and she's been able to like, I've just given her a broad idea and been like, okay, this is kind of what I want the feeling to be behind it. If you can give it to me, that'd be great. And she always has. She's always delivered.
Last few things. So now you mentioned being in the right place at the right time. You're in AEW. It's been a few weeks, like we said. What do you kind of see yourself, and what's your plan, and what's your thought and vision for the future over the next few months?
I First and foremost, I want to wrestle as much as humanly possible. I literally want to be in the ring as much as I can, just because I feel like I have a lot of catching up to do. Mm. Not necessarily because I haven't been in the ring, but like feeling how, like, again, like falling back in love. I feel like, right, every time I'm in the ring, it's another date. It's another date, you know? So, I want to wrestle as much as possible. These girls are absolutely incredible and really want to wrestle just as much as I do, and want to tell stories, which is all that I want to do. And like, I think that each one of these girls is going to bring out a different side of me, a different fight to me. And I'm really excited about that. And I just want to have fun. Mm-hmm. I want to come to work and I want to have fun. I want to enjoy myself. I want to root for other people. I want to come out and I want to sing and air guitar with all the fans to my incredible entrance music. I want to feel like, I know I feel like I'm home, but I just want to have a good time. I want to tell some stories, and I just want to, if I can, I want to help take this women's division to the next level, and like, to where it's no question anymore. AEW is the top tier product, hands down. There's no question. Men, women, everybody is just the top tier. This is the brand to beat. And
it's a huge acquisition to have you here, for sure.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you.
Last two questions. Okay. Favorite match you ever had?
Favorite match I ever had? Ever?
Ever.
Favorite match I ever had? Honestly, maybe that one with Ronda. I think because it meant so much, because like, right, we had to kind of work
event,
for it.
Yeah.
It was the main event, but like, we had to work for it. We had to convince people to let us do it. And then like, I felt like we delivered. So like, the meaning behind it, and like I said, the challenge to like, to try and like adhere to a different style was awesome, and got my brain working in a bunch of different ways. I think that one was amazing. I had a couple like intergender matches that I did on the indies that I really, really enjoyed. I had a match in Canada with a guy named Josh Alexander, who currently works with Impact, who is incredibly talented and super, super smart. And I it was like, he had just come back from his neck injury, and he trusted me on a lot of stuff, and I was very grateful. So definitely that one of those matches is probably one of my favorites. I have so many for different reasons, emotional reasons, things, sure, I've learned and stuff like that. What about you? What's your favorite match ever, now that I'm going to put you on the spot?
Yeah, it's weird, because like, the ladder match I had with Sean for the WWE title was one, because, mm-hmm, the same thing, because we worked 7 months, mm-hmm, this great program. A lot of the ones I've had here, the one I had with Moxley where I lost, mm-hmm, the title to him, was great.
Mm-hmm.
The stadium stampedes have been great. Mm-hmm. I mean, I had, you know, the one that pops in my head, a match with Isaiah Cassidy about, mm-hmm, 3 months ago, that was awesome. The ones I had with Orange Cassidy, lots of Cassidys here. But yeah, I mean, I like you, there's a lot of different ones for different ideas and, mm-hmm, different places in my life and my career. But usually I know when I come out of the ring, that was great, wasn't bad, mm-hmm, could have been better. The one I just had with Max, with, mm-hmm, MJF on the pay-per-view that you debuted was awesome for a lot of reasons too. So last question, I'll put you in the Brookside spot.
Oh, goodness.
Top five punk bands now.
Oh, no. You're doing it to me. Terrible. Oh, no. Robbie, I hope you're not listening. No,
he's
I'm not gonna say Alkaline Trio, I promise. But I do love Alkaline Trio. There's no disrespect there.
That.
No disrespect there. So I would have to say, the ones that come into my brain right this very second, Rancid, of course, has to be, yep, number one. Not a lot of people know about this one, but Pup is a punk band that I love very much. I have to say, you know, one of my, always will always be my favorites, is the Misfits. I know there's a lot of the Danzig version, who is also a huge wrestling fan, by the way. I don't know if you know this,
fan.
But yes,
do, yeah.
Glenn Danzig is a huge wrestling fan. He called me a scumbag one time, and I loved it. It was the best day of my life. Okay, we're at three. State Champs is another one that Robbie would definitely call bubblegum pop, but is very, very, yes. But they were another one of my entrance musics post Black Sheep. And then I am going to have to say, the one that I keep coming back to is The Clash.
Oh yeah.
And that was because Robbie and I, like a close like tie with the Clash is Bad Brains. Bad Brains and the Clash. Mainly also to MVP is a huge fan of Bad Brains.
Yes, he
and,
is. Yeah.
Robbie is a huge fan of The Clash, just so that I don't get yelled at by either one of them. Those are both amazing bands. So, yeah, so those
That's
are
That's a good list. There's the one of my favorites is pretty obscure from Canada from the 80s. They're called the Dayglo Abortions. Great, just kind of a Dead Kennedys type vibe
gotcha,
to it.
Gotcha.
And the album to check out is Here Today, Guano Tomorrow.
Oh.
There you go.
Guano. Bat poo.
There you go. But you are definitely not guano, Ruby
Yay,
Soho.
I'm not
it's
bat
awesome
poo.
To talk to you. And I'm excited to see all the great things you're going to do
here
in AEW.
Thank you so much for having me, Chris. I appreciate it.
That was
thank
awesome.
You.
Thank you.